secure we feel in our attachment to others. Our attachment style begins to emerge during infancy. Infants tend to show one of four different types of behavior when their mothers or fathers leave the room. Some infants are more anxious than others. A baby may cry, protest, bang its hands, and may seem desperately afraid. Babies may have an anxious, ambivalent style of attachment, protesting when mom leaves the room, but showing anger or aloofness when she returns. Some have an avoidant style, in which they seem to remain somewhat attached, but they often appear wary of getting close to mom. Others have a secure attachment. They can tolerate mom leaving the room and show enthusiasm when she returns. Securely attached infants are comfortable when alone, and they are more likely to explore their environment, knowing that they have a secure base because they trust that mom will return. According to attachment theory, infants have an innately predisposed tendency to maintain closeness to the main parental figure, usually but not always the mother. An infant's attachment is based on the adaptive value of the relationship with a caretaker for protection, support, food, and the opportunity to socialize. When an infant begins to recognize that a mother's return is predictable, that he or she can rely on mom coming back, the infant builds up a belief that she is reliable, trustworthy, responsive, and caring. This provides a sense of security for the infant. It allows him or her to explore the environment away from the mother and to self-soothe in her absence. Alternatively, an infant may develop expectations that a caregiver cannot be relied on, does not care, or is not responsive. Attachment theorists believe that these styles continue throughout life and affect how we relate in a variety of close relationships, especially intimate relationships. If your expectation of a committed relationship is that the other person is not responsive, not reliable, threatens separation, and cannot be trusted, then your adult relationships may be at risk. Your early attachments. Look back on your attachments and relationships in childhood. Consider these common scenarios and see whether any apply to you. Did you worry that one or both parents might leave you, or that they might get sick or die? This may lead you to fear sudden loss or abandonment as an adult. Were there threats of separation or divorce, or an actual separation or divorce? This may have resulted in a fear that your closest relationship could fall apart. Did your family move a lot? If you attended different schools or lived in different neighborhoods, relationships with other kids may have been cut short. Maybe they picked on you or weren't loyal. This could lead to fears that being on your own will leave you in an unfriendly world, where people will not be supportive, where you will be isolated. Did someone you dated let you down, even cheated on you? Your dating history may have resulted in a fear that someone will cheat on you, manipulate you, or suddenly leave you, so you may have become hyper-focused on these potential threats. Your experience in close relationships. It's helpful to look at your style of experience in close relationships because it can offer more insight into how you feel when intimacy begins to develop. Using this measure, you can evaluate how you feel in close relationships. Are you comfortable with closeness? Do you find closeness to be unpleasant, almost as if it is smothering or unnatural at times? Are you dependent and needy? Are you anxious in your close relationships? Go through this adult attachment scale for close relationships and think about how you respond. The following questions evaluate how you generally feel. So think about your past and present relationships with people who have been especially important to you, such as family members, romantic partners, and close friends. On a piece of paper, respond to each statement with a number between 1 and 5 that corresponds to this scale. Answering with a 1 indicates that the statement is not at all characteristic of you. A 5 indicates that it is very characteristic of you, and the other numbers indicate degrees in between. Adult Attachment Scale for Close Relationships. 1. I find it relatively easy to get close to people. 2. I find it difficult to allow myself to depend on others. 3. I often worry that other people don't really love me. 4. I find that others are reluctant to get as close as I would like. 5. I am comfortable depending on others. 6. I don't worry about people getting too close to me. 7. I find that people are never there when you need them. 8. I am somewhat uncomfortable being close to others. 9. I often worry that other people won't want to stay with me. 10. When I show my feelings for others, I'm afraid they will not feel the same about me. 11. I often wonder whether other people really care about me. 12. I am comfortable developing close relationships with others. 13. I am uncomfortable when anyone gets too emotionally close to me. 14. I know that people will be there when I need them. 15. I want to get close to people, but I worry about being hurt. 16. I find it difficult to trust others completely. 17. People often want me to be emotionally closer than I feel comfortable being. 18. I am not sure that I can always depend on people to be there when I need them. Your responses to these statements fall into three categories: closeness, dependability, and anxiety. By scoring your answers to the statements relating to each one of these categories, you can get more clarity around your style. Items with an asterisk need to be reverse scored, which means that even though you may have written down a 1 to rate your experience, you would score it with a 5. If you rated something a 2, score it as a 4, and vice versa. Neutral scores remain a 3. Add up the scores in each category. The closeness scale. This measures the extent to which you are comfortable with closeness and intimacy. This relates to your responses to the statements 1, 6, 8, asterisk, 12, 13, asterisk, and 17, asterisk. A high score here indicates that you are comfortable with closeness and intimacy, and a low score shows that you have difficulty getting close or allowing others to get close to you. The dependability scale. This measures the extent to which you feel you can depend on others to be available when needed. Your responses to statements 2, asterisk, 5, 7, asterisk, 14, 16, asterisk, and 18, asterisk are part of this scale. A high score here indicates that you feel you can rely on and trust others, and a low score shows that it is difficult for you to depend on others. The anxiety scale. This measures the extent to which you worry about being rejected or unloved, and is related to statements 3, 4, 9, 10, 11, and 15. A high score here indicates that you are anxious about people in close relationships, and a low score shows that you are not particularly anxious in these relationships. When you consider what your responses to the statements in the scale indicate about your style, you may gain more clarity by asking yourself these questions. Do you find yourself comfortable or uncomfortable with closeness in relationships? If you are uncomfortable in a close relationship, what about closeness might bother you? In a close relationship, are you concerned that you might lose yourself, your identity might be threatened, or it may limit your freedom? Are you concerned about being controlled by someone? Do you feel that you can count on people, or do you think that they will disappoint you, hurt you, or not be helpful? Can you think of specific examples when others let you down? Are there examples of people you can count on? Do you often feel anxious in close relationships, as if people will leave you, or that they don't care for you as much as you want or need? What are some examples of people leaving or not caring enough? Are there examples of relationships in which you don't feel anxious? Like attachment styles, your comfort level with closeness is related to how jealous you feel. If you don't feel comfortable with closeness, you are less likely to be jealous. This is because you may not rely on the relationship as much for your happiness. But your avoidance of closeness may also make it difficult to develop an intimate relationship. Someone is less likely to be jealous if they maintain some distance or are not close to their partner. Those with a secure attachment style are the least jealous. People who are insecure about their attachments are more likely to be jealous. If you are prone to anxiety in close relationships, you may be reluctant to get close because you fear losing the relationship. And when you are close, your insecurity increases because you have more to lose and you fear you cannot cope with the loss. Everyone differs in the desire for closeness, with some people feeling anxious about any threat to the relationship and others feeling threatened by too much closeness. For example, the person who is the object of jealousy may feel that he or she is being controlled, engulfed, or overwhelmed by the demands of the jealous partner. He or she may therefore seek distance by putting up barriers to closeness that may feed into the jealousy narrative. In close relationships, we often assume that we both want the same thing. But one person may want closeness, while the other might prefer a parallel partner who is around, but never quite close to them. How does your partner feel about closeness? Your relationship history. You can also look at jealousy from the perspective of your personal history with relationships from childhood until the present moment. Brian learned that his father, who had portrayed himself as a pious churchgoer, had a series of relationships with women other than his mother. But Brian's brother didn't tell him until he was 20 years old, establishing for Brian the idea that people will hide the truth from him. This early sense of distrust contributed to his distrust of his wife. If your childhood has included infidelity by one or both of your parents, you may trust people less. This may set a bias in your mind, and you may think people can't be trusted in intimate relationships. If your parents were not responsive to your needs, or not reliably meeting your needs, you may be prone to believing that you cannot trust your current partner to be there for you. If your parents invalidated your feelings and perceptions in ways that taught you that you cannot rely on what you think and feel, you may be prone to jealousy. Penny didn't trust her partner. When she was a kid, her mother would get angry with Penny if she needed something while her mother was on the phone with friends. Her mother never had time for her needs. As a result, Penny thought that her partner also couldn't be trusted because she believed that he would favor other people over her. Your ability to trust people may also be affected by a history of problematic relationships. If you have chosen partners who are narcissistic and dishonest, you are more likely to believe that people cannot be trusted in relationships. Zoe was attracted to cool, unavailable men. She had a series of relationships with men who seemed exceptionally unable to make any commitments to her. At first, this sparked her interest because she conflated the fact that they were unattainable with the idea that they were desirable. And Zoe believed she'd be able to convince each of them that she was the right one for him. This inevitably led to heartbreak. She had several underlying beliefs: that she didn't deserve a real commitment, that men who are unattainable are more interesting, and that the kind of guys who want commitment are usually boring. Zoe's attraction led to experiences that confirmed that men would betray her. She didn't deserve a loyal partner, and she was doomed to one rejection or betrayal after another. Choosing someone who was honest, reliable, and, perhaps, a bit more boring, would help her recognize that relationships don't have to be doomed. In many cases, we could never predict that betrayal would happen. But it happened, and the effects stayed with us. Helen described her relationship with her husband as conventional. With three kids and a house in the suburbs, they celebrated holidays and attended church together. She thought they had the typical middle-class marriage, one that she could count on. But then, much to Helen's surprise, she learned that her husband had been carrying on an affair for a long time. After the divorce, she learned that he had had several affairs during their marriage. This set the stage for future distrust. Your commitment and investment. Jealousy may depend on your level of commitment and your investment in a relationship. During the earliest stages of a relationship, there is little investment, so jealousy is minimal. If you only had one date with someone, you don't have much to lose. But as you get more involved, you have more invested and you have more to lose. When Steve began dating Rachel, he was attracted by a lot of things. She was beautiful to him. She had a great sense of humor, and she had a free spirit. Even though she came from a traditional background, she had experimented sexually and had lived on her own. He was excited getting to know her during the first few weeks of the relationship because he found her free spirit and experimentation with sex to be turn-ons. She was spontaneous, open, emotionally intense, and really interested in him. He felt little jealousy. Steve was just excited to be with Rachel. But after a few months passed, and he fell in love with her, he became obsessed with jealous thoughts and feelings. He dwelled on her past experimentation and wondered if he was simply another experiment. The more committed he became, the more distrustful he felt. Why did Steve suddenly become jealous? Because he had more to lose. But at the same time, he and Rachel were not in a settled commitment. During this middle part of the relationship, there is investment, but there is also uncertainty. You just don't know whether the relationship will last. It could end. This uncertainty makes jealousy more common during the middle phase before you make a commitment to being together. As most relationships continue for years, jealousy decreases unless, of course, someone has an affair. In a well-established, long-lasting relationship, there is less uncertainty, so there is also less jealousy. In a study of 100 college women, those in steady dating relationships were less likely to report jealousy than women not in steady relationships. Steve's jealousy had a lot to do with developing greater commitment and greater investment. Because increased commitment during this middle phase is associated with a greater likelihood of jealousy, it is important to look at how you view your partner's commitment. Some people are more likely to accept a promise of fidelity. I won't see other people, or I won't sleep with other people. This can be sufficient commitment for them, enough to trust. Others have their own criteria for how commitment is expressed. For example, if a partner spends a lot of time with friends or alone, some might view him or her as lacking commitment. Or they may think, he only wants to see me a couple of times a week. That's not much of a commitment. We see the development of commitment differently. Some of us are patient and can allow commitment to evolve as the relationship moves forward in time. Some of us view commitment in all-or-nothing terms. Consider these common beliefs to gain insight into your style. My partner should spend almost all his or her leisure time with me. My partner should contact me daily. My partner should tell me that he or she loves me. My partner should do things to make me feel special. My partner should plan future activities with me. My partner shouldn't have any secrets. This variety of ideas we can hold conveys that two people in a relationship may have different ideas about commitment, especially when the relationship is developing. One person might want more independence, or may not be completely sure how they feel about the relationship. The other person might feel totally committed and sure. These differences can trigger a struggle. Commitment is usually something that develops with time, and in the earlier stages of a relationship, often one person is more committed than the other. One person can set up tests to see whether the other person has the kind of commitment that he or she is looking for. Negotiating commitment differences can be important to avoid putting your partner to the test. Lynn felt that Mark lacked commitment because he often wanted to spend time with his guy friends hanging out, drinking, and going to parties, usually without her. She was patient at first, but after a couple of months, she began to think that he just wasn't interested in the kind of committed relationship that she wanted. When she confronted him, he finally did acknowledge that he didn't like being tied down and wanted freedom to be himself, so she broke off the relationship. Lynn and Mark had different interests in closeness and commitment and wanted different things. Mark wanted a compartmentalized relationship, whereas Lynn was hoping to find someone who might be a potential husband. Rather than trying to force him to want what she wanted, she decided to look elsewhere. In the early stage of a relationship, there is little invested and little that can be lost, so jealousy is less likely to occur. As you develop more commitment and spend more time together, there is more to lose if the relationship ends, so there is a greater likelihood of jealousy. But simply spending time together may not equate a commitment, and, as we've seen, we often differ from each other in how we define commitment. Some of us are comfortable with our partners having freedom to spend time with other people, while some of us may want more signs of commitment to the relationship. If we believe that our partners are truly committed to our relationship, we are less likely to experience jealousy. The two of you need to come to terms with how you define this commitment. The question is, do the two of you want the same thing? Trying to coerce someone into complying with your wishes can set the stage for greater conflict. Emotional intimacy. Your jealousy will also depend on the emotional intimacy that you experience with your partner. The greater the intimacy, the more vulnerable you are to fearing the loss of that intimacy. We are seldom jealous in relationships that we view as shallow or casual. In fact, some people purposely wish to maintain superficial relationships so that they minimize the risk of being hurt by betrayal or rejection. If the relationship is perceived as superficial, then there is less to feel jealous about. But nothing ventured, nothing gained. Eloise said, "I just want to be that party girl. You know, the one who dances on the bar drunk without her bra. I don't want to fall for that nice guy who I could love because I know he'll hurt me. I know I won't be able to count on him. This way, I know it won't work out, so I know I won't really get hurt." Avoiding intimacy is more common than one might expect. We often assume that everyone is looking for commitment and intimacy, but Eloise was rejected by her partner a few years before, and it led her to try to commit suicide. As a result, she equated intimacy and trust with overwhelming devastation. By maintaining a shallow persona, it was easier for her to reject anyone who was really interested in a serious relationship as a loser. If you are in a relationship with someone who avoids intimacy and you want intimacy, jealousy can arise because you have conflicting expectations. When intimacy issues are involved, some people may actually try to provoke a jealous response in their partners. Doing this is a way of seeking reassurance that a partner is committed, because when he or she engages in jealous behaviors, you can feel reassured. However, the very nature of jealous expressions, interrogating, withdrawing, demanding reassurance, and threatening, can increase the uncertainty in the relationship. The object of the jealousy may back away, counterattack, or threaten to leave the relationship, thereby adding even more anxiety to fears of betrayal and abandonment. All the same, research shows that when we perceive that our partner is jealous, we believe that he or she will never leave. The result is that we test partners by trying to make them feel jealous. Other reasons to intentionally make partners feel jealous include punishing them for something they have done and competing with them if they are flirting with someone else. In some cases, people even hedge their bets and flirt with other people to ensure they have an alternative should a current relationship end. They might flirt with other people to boost self-esteem and prove that they are still attractive. If any of these motives for making a partner jealous ring true, you might ask yourself, what kinds of things can I do to provoke jealousy? And consider the conflict that results. Is this conflict with your partner worth it? It often takes two to have a jealousy problem. You are not going to build security by playing the jealousy game. Uncertainty and worry. Uncertainty is the main issue in jealousy and in anxiety. If you are uncertain about the relationship, you are more likely to feel threatened that your partner might become interested in someone else. This is especially true when you have some investment in the relationship. New friendships or opportunities for your partner to interact with new people may increase this sense of uncertainty, and you may begin to worry. Uncertainty is an important element in worry. Worriers equate uncertainty with a bad outcome, and they view uncertainty as unacceptable. If you are prone to worry, you may believe that it will reduce or eliminate uncertainty, and that checking, collecting information, and seeking reassurance will eliminate uncertainty. You may think, I don't know for sure that she is faithful, and I need to know so I can relax. I can't accept not knowing for sure. I need to know, or I need to know right now. Uncertainty and the need to know. While you might view worry as a way to get certainty, when you don't find proof, you are left with the uncertainty that the evidence is still to be discovered. You think, maybe there is something I don't know, and I need to find out now. The combination of a tendency to worry and perceived or actual uncertainty of the relationship will add to your jealous preoccupations. Research supports this, as the greater perceived uncertainty in the relationship, the greater the likelihood of jealousy. Not knowing becomes believing that what you don't know will hurt you. But as you demand complete certainty, your attempts to gain sufficient information will inevitably fail. Because the problem with uncertainty is that you can never have absolute uncertainty. In fact, you can be married for 10 years and still not know for sure that you can trust your partner. Brian had been married to Sharon for 14 years, and his sense of uncertainty increased because she began taking more business trips. He said, because I don't know for sure what she's up to, it's possible that she might cheat on me. I just don't want to be caught by surprise. I think I can find out what is going on by following her when she is here and by checking her email. But it is driving me crazy. Then I begin questioning her, which really pisses her off, and she tells me that I am driving her crazy. She pulls away, which makes me feel worse. Brian is like a lot of people who are caught up in jealousy. To him, uncertainty is an intolerable condition, and it predicts betrayal. He wants to avoid surprise, but he lives every day in the miserable clutches of his jealousy. How can I ever know for sure? He asked, his voice cracking as he tries to keep from crying. Uncertainty and geographical distance. It's true that geographical distance adds to uncertainty. Some people try to make relationships work even though they are separated by hundreds or even thousands of miles. And some do make it work. But the distance, which makes it difficult to see each other, can add to uncertainty. When I gather personal histories of relationships, many people tell me that they tried to continue with a high school sweetheart despite attending colleges separated by hundreds of miles. Sometimes it works. I have a friend who met his future wife when he was 14. She went to a college far from his. They married in their senior year, and they are still married today. So it can work. But not always. For most people, distance and uncertainty wear on them. Julie was trying to continue a relationship with a man after he moved away. They had been involved for 8 years, but it was becoming increasingly more difficult to stay connected. They would see each other every 3 months. He made little effort to visit her, and she constantly wondered what he was up to. Uncertainty and forming attachments to people who are already attached. You're likely to be filled with uncertainty when you form an attachment to someone involved with someone else. Catherine met a man at her high school reunion and had a fling that weekend. He was married, had several children, and lived hundreds of miles away. She continued to see him, hoping that she could either convince him to leave his wife or that she could compartmentalize this relationship and just accept seeing him when she could. She was sinking herself further into a no-win situation as she struggled to balance anxiety and anger along with hopes of working things out. The relationship was fraught with uncertainty. It may be best to keep things simple with no triangulated relationships, no compartmentalizing, no settling for second best. You might think that you are sophisticated and can handle a situation like this, but my observation is that our human nature leads us to form attachments that we want to be exclusive. So fooling ourselves about accepting the arrangement is likely to backfire. In fact, the further you get into this kind of thing, the harder it may be to extricate yourself. Part 2. How Jealousy Becomes a Problem. Chapter 4. Hijacked by the Jealous Mind. Jealousy has a mind of its own. When we are jealous, we are often hijacked by thoughts and feelings that make us think that we are unraveling, that our world is falling apart, and that something needs to be done immediately. We think we need the answer right now, that our feelings will escalate unless we get rid of them immediately, and that our partner will betray us unless we control things right now. The alarms are going off, blaring, driving us mad. We are hijacked by the thoughts and feelings of the jealous mind. All our emotions have evolved to tell us about our needs and any threats to our welfare. As described in Chapter 1, jealousy is an evolved and complex emotion that has been maintained because it ties into our need to protect our genetic investment and to ensure that offspring have the best protection and support that they can have. But when our thoughts and feelings are intense, we are not reflecting on this or even on the facts. We are responding to the primitive and powerful alarm in our head. We are hijacked. When we are jealous, our threat detection system is activated. We look for any sign that our partner might be interested in someone else, or that someone else is interested in him or her. We view other people as imminent threats, and our partner's thoughts and feelings become potential signs of betrayal. Our minds are determined to find clues, no matter how small and subtle they might be. In this chapter, we will explore how our minds operate when we are in jealousy mode, which is a combination of thoughts, feelings, behaviors, strategies, and communications that often operate together. Jealousy mode is triggered by our threat detection system when it determines that something might be going on. Once we are caught up in the jealousy mode, we have a difficult time stepping away from it. Our emotions escalate. When jealousy mode is activated and running the show, it has dramatic effects, including taking things personally, mind reading, predicting catastrophes, applying impossible standards and rules to our relationship, activating worry as a way to cope with the unknown, and dwelling on all the negatives, imaginary or real, that our mind can dredge up. As a result, we become anxious, agitated, angry, and depressed. In this chapter, we'll consider how our predispositions may escalate our jealousy, maintain it, and lead us to take actions that we might regret later. There are four parts of the jealous mind: core beliefs, rule books, biased thinking, and worry and rumination. Each component reinforces the others, keeping us locked into a system that does the following: maintains and elaborates on initial threat detection, magnifies the importance of events, directs us to confirm our fears, and keeps us stuck imagining what could happen or what we think has happened. Let's take a closer look at each of these components. Core beliefs. We have core beliefs about ourselves and others that direct our jealous thinking. Core beliefs are generalities that describe how we think about things. They create habitual biases that we often are not aware of. For example, a core belief about the self might be, I am unlovable. Not interesting, attractive, desirable, or able to maintain the love of other people. This core belief is the lens through which you see the world, but you seldom realize that you are wearing a lens. Imagine wearing dark sunglasses all the time, which make everything seem dimmer and darker than they are. If you don't realize that you have these glasses on, you end up thinking that the world is always dark. That is what a core belief does. It's a lens that biases the way you see things. You may have put on your jealousy lens. You see everything through that lens, and very little lightness or positivity can get through to you. You are locked into your own perspective. When beliefs appear as facts. We can mistake our beliefs and thoughts for facts. It happens frequently. Here's a scenario that shows how this works. Say you are in a strange city and it's late at night. You are alone walking back to your hotel. There was no one else on the street. Suddenly, you hear two men walking at a fast pace behind you. You think, these guys are going to mug me. They might even kill me. Your thought of danger leads you to become extremely anxious and afraid. You walk faster and worry that you might not make it. But wait. What if you had a different thought? What if you thought, those are two guys from the conference. They are probably heading back to the same hotel. You don't feel anxious. You might even feel relieved. You take your time. In both cases, the initial facts are the same: being on the street late at night with two strangers walking more quickly behind you. What differs is your interpretation of the facts, whether it is dangerous or not dangerous. Our interpretations can be true or false. When we are anxious, angry, or sad, we often treat our thoughts as if they are facts. The thoughts appear in your head, and you then reach conclusions. Your partner must be interested in someone else. He or she will betray you. You are no longer loved or special. But not all thoughts are true, and you won't know until you check out the facts. Is a core belief a fact? Imagine if I said to you, I think I am a zebra. You would look at me in disbelief, thinking, I am insane. I then insist, I believe 100% that I am a zebra. How do we figure out whether my confidence is merited? We look at the facts. I look in the mirror, and I am astounded to see I don't have any stripes. I don't look like a horse. When we are angry or anxious, we often treat our thoughts as if they are true. Our confidence that we are correct becomes the proof. But believing something to be true doesn't make it so, and our confidence is not really evidence. Identify the core beliefs floating around in your mind that contribute to jealousy. Then look at facts and logic to determine the truth. You may be right. Maybe your partner is planning on cheating. Or you may not be right. Core beliefs that contribute to jealousy are negative thoughts that we treat as absolutely true. Here are some common ones. If you have a core belief that you are not lovable, then you might fear that your partner will find someone who is more interesting or attractive than you. You might believe you are not able to take care of yourself. You need someone else, or you think you cannot be happy on your own. This core belief may lead you to profoundly fear losing a partner who takes care of you or is a companion. Some people have a core belief that they are special and unique, superior to others. With this belief, you view others as threats to your status and think, if my partner is interested in someone else, then this means that I am not special and unique. Core beliefs about other people. We can also have core beliefs about other people. One core belief is that people are judgmental. This can lead to jealousy because you believe that any negative judgment your partner may have will threaten the relationship. You hold the impossible standard that your partner has to like everything about you. In addition, this focus may lead you to believe that your partner and other people are constantly thinking that you are inferior. With a core belief about the harshness of others, your self-esteem becomes fragile as you assume that if someone doesn't like something about you, then you must be inferior or undesirable. Your self-esteem goes up and down depending on how you think other people are evaluating you in any given moment. Looking for confirmation rather than facts. A consequence of core beliefs is a confirmation bias. This is our automatic tendency to seek out information that confirms our pre-existing beliefs. We are seldom conscious of this bias. It's our minds on autopilot, searching the environment for information that proves we are right. So if you have the core belief that you are boring, then you will automatically see evidence of it when someone yawns. If someone changes the topic, it means that what you're saying has nothing valuable to contribute. You only see information consistent with your current belief. Memory is also directed toward information that confirms our core beliefs. When people are depressed, they selectively recall failure, rejection, and disappointment. Their memories are directed by current moods and negative beliefs about themselves. The same is true with our core beliefs about ourselves. We selectively remember information that is consistent with an idea that we are not lovable or interesting or able to maintain relationships. It's not that we want to suffer. This happens simply because our mind is running in automatic mode. Later in the book, you'll learn techniques that you can use to slow down your thinking and examine the full range of evidence in a less biased way. The same confirmation bias operates when we think of other people. For example, if you think that others are untrustworthy, you selectively notice and recall information that confirms that other people lie, cheat, and manipulate. I have heard both men and women express core beliefs that men can't be trusted and women can't be trusted. Of course, you can find evidence of both men and women to confirm your negative belief, but you can also find a lot of evidence that argues against it. The problem is that we tend to focus on whatever confirms our pre-existing beliefs. Core beliefs are overly general. Men can't be trusted. Rigid. They are applied relentlessly and directed by confirmation bias, seeking out information consistent with the belief. Consider this simple example of confirmation bias in jealousy. Let's say you have a core belief that people can't be trusted, and your mind is often running to confirm this. You can engage in mind reading. My wife is lying. She's interested in someone else, or she finds me boring. You have selective attention to the slightest detail of possibility. The yoga mat is at home, therefore she is lying. Then you might notice that she is looking at her boss and infer, through more mind reading, that she is interested in having an affair with him. You start predicting the future with almost no evidence, while discounting any signs that she is committed to you, because that is not consistent with your core belief that she, like others, cannot be trusted. Example of confirmation bias in jealousy. Core belief? People are not trustworthy. Look for clues? My wife said she was at yoga, but I saw her mat at home. discount anything positive about the relationship? She kisses me goodnight, and every night I wonder who else she kissed that day. Magnify negatives. I can't stop thinking about the way my wife was looking at her boss. What happens when a core belief comes up against information that is not consistent with the belief? For example, you find that you can trust your female doctor. You will discount the new evidence by thinking something like, there are always exceptions to the rule, but everyone knows that women can't be trusted. We further maintain our core beliefs by relying on anecdotes. Anecdotes are memorable. We pay attention to them. We remember them. Don't you recall how our friend Susan's husband cheated on her? These anecdotes are often quite vivid. You can form a picture in your mind. You might know the person, and your story has a beginning, a middle, and an end. But one anecdote is not evidence for the whole world, is it? Our minds did not evolve to think about percentages or base rates, that is, the percentage of people who are faithful and trustworthy. We put much more emphasis on information that has a story and a picture. That's why the news loves to show dramatic videos of things happening. Who wants to look at a graph when you can watch a car crashing into a wall? We also rely on biased information, information that is memorable, has an anecdote, and seems personally relevant to us. It's like Googling the word accident, and up comes 418 million results. So we conclude that we should be strapped to our chairs with helmets and never leave our houses. We don't Google safety or likelihood of an accident. So our results will bias us toward the belief that the world is dangerous. The same thing happens with our jealousy and our core beliefs. We keep proving ourselves right. Where do these beliefs come from? Most of our core beliefs about ourselves are established during childhood. Here are some common ones that fuel jealousy. If we are surrounded by people who are untrustworthy, invalidating, and deceitful, we are likely to develop a core belief that people cannot be trusted. If we are told that appearances are everything, then we may form a core belief that being attractive to our partner is the only thing holding the relationship together. This can lead to jealousy when we think that our partner finds someone else attractive, because we must be the most attractive person to him or her, and in addition, that our partner must think that we are the only attractive person. Lack of attention from our parents can lead to the core belief that we are not interesting. We can internalize the idea that we are not interesting or lovable, which causes us to distrust the people we get involved with. Think about your core beliefs about yourself and other people. Are there any significant patterns? Can you recall how your childhood experiences, or experiences across the entire span of your life, may have reinforced certain beliefs about yourself and other people? Here's an example. Gwen's father was usually busy at work, even when he was at home, and he had little time for her. As a child, she didn't realize that her father really loved her and thought she was smart and creative. But he was compulsive about work, dedicated to his research, and anxious that he was falling behind. As a result, she found herself reliving this scene with others, seeking out approval from men who were unavailable, ungiving, and often secretive. Your core beliefs. Reflecting on your core beliefs about yourself and others may help you understand which factors can fuel your jealousy at times. Consider the following questions in terms of your childhood and significant adult relationships. Was there emphasis on being physically attractive, powerful, rich, successful, entertaining, or interesting? Did you feel pressure to be some way or do something in order to be accepted? Did you think they couldn't just love you for who you are? Did you feel that people were not always there for you? Did your parents invalidate your feelings? Did you fear that they might even leave? Did you think that they were disappointed in you? Were there threats of abandonment, even subtle threats? Did you sense that the relationship between your parents was problematic? We all have vulnerabilities. We all have imperfect childhoods and imperfect parents. And we all have imperfect relationships. But some of us become more hurt, disappointed, or simply confused about things. These painful experiences can leave a mark on us. They linger on in the jealous mind. Rule books. The second part of the jealous mind is having rule books. These are rules, ideas, and assumptions that we have about ourselves and other people. They're often framed this way. If this happens, then that needs to happen. For example, I have a rule so I don't get wet when it rains. If there is a high probability of rain, then I carry an umbrella. Rule books seem to operate automatically, almost like a thinking reflex that leads us to immediately believe something before we have time to look at the facts. Rule books might be lying under the surface, but we can reflect on patterns of anxiety, anger, and sadness to see whether we have rules that contribute to jealousy. Your rules may make you think that if you follow these guidelines, then you will be able to predict and control what will happen. They may seem important to you because you assume that they will protect you. You may think that your rules are realistic, ensuring that you won't be duped, that you can predict what will happen, that you will be able to control things, and that you might be able to get out of a situation before it's too late. But your rules may also lead you to overreact, jump to conclusions, and undermine yourself. These rules apply to other people, ourselves, and our relationships. We can have them about how people should relate to us, think about us, and feel about us. They can tell us what we think we need to do, and they can fuel jealousy. Let's take a closer look at some of the implicit rules and assumptions that can reside in the jealous mind. Consider the following rules we commonly have and see whether any apply to you. Rules about others. I shouldn't trust others because they will betray me. If someone disappoints me in something, then I can never trust them again. I need to know everything about my partner in order to trust him or her. If my partner really loved me, he or she would never find anyone else interesting or attractive. I can't rely on other people to be there for me. Men or women are always looking for a better option. Rules about ourselves. I should be the most attractive person all the time. I should get approval from my partner for almost everything I do. I need to entertain others or they will find me boring. I need to have a relationship in order to be happy. I can never disappoint anyone. I should be happy and secure all the time. Rules about relationships. We should be intensely happy all the time. My partner should tell me everything that he or she is thinking and feeling. Our sex life should be amazing, always intense and spontaneous. We should never have arguments. My partner should always be available to me. I should always know exactly where my partner is, what he or she is doing, and who he or she is with. We should never have secrets. Relationships are either all good or all bad. What are the consequences of these rules? Let's look at this one. If my partner really loved me, he or she would never find anyone else interesting or attractive. Here are some questions to ponder to assess how realistic this rule is. Does it make sense that you would be the only person in the world that your partner found attractive? Do you find other people attractive? Does this mean that you cannot be trusted? Do you find other people interesting? Does finding someone else interesting or attractive mean that you will betray your partner? No one will live up to the expectations behind this rule. So having it will guarantee that you will feel disappointed, insecure, and jealous. How about a different thought, one that might be more realistic and adaptive? There are many people who are also attractive and interesting, but that doesn't mean my partner doesn't love me or that he or she will betray me. Consider the advantages of this new thought. Is it realistic? Let's look at this rule. I need to have a relationship in order to be happy. What are the consequences of this rule for you? Because it implies that you can't be happy without a relationship, does it make you more vulnerable to anxiety and jealousy? Does it make you fear losing the relationship you have even more? Does it ensure misery for you if you are single? Is it really true? Were you ever happy, even for a moment, before the current relationship? As much as we may love our partner and derive great satisfaction from our relationships, is it really essential that we have this particular relationship? We may think and feel it is essential, but it is very likely that you have had meaning, satisfaction, and happiness before this relationship. Therefore, it is likely that even if this relationship didn't work out, you would be able to thrive again. Let's consider the consequences for another rule. I should always know exactly where my partner is, what he or she is doing, and who he or she is with. Does this rule contribute to your anxiety, jealousy, and helplessness? Can you really know for sure exactly what your partner is doing? Does your partner always know what you are doing? Are you assuming that if you don't know, then your partner is betraying you? If your partner didn't know where you were today, does that mean you are betraying him or her? Here are questions to ask about one more rule. My partner should tell me everything that he or she is thinking and feeling. Are you assuming that private thoughts and feelings are dangerous? What is the evidence that they are dangerous? Don't you have some thoughts and feelings, some memories, perhaps some fantasies that you don't always share? Does not sharing them mean that no one can trust you? Does demanding to know everything make you less trusting, lead you to interrogate your partner, or start arguments? What would be the danger if you were to accept some privacy for both of you? If your rules demand perfection, absolute certainty, total happiness and satisfaction all the time, then you are dooming yourself to frustration, misery, and jealousy. Reflect on your pattern of jealousy and frustration. Ask yourself what rules you are using. Would you be better off with more acceptance, less perfectionism, and more flexibility? Do you know people who have less demanding and intrusive rules? Are they always miserable? Biased thinking. A third part of our thinking style includes common biases in thinking that can lead to distortions. These are thoughts that come to you automatically, spontaneously, as if they are thinking reflexes biased toward distrust and jealousy. It may be that your thoughts turn out to be true. Maybe your partner is thinking about someone else, and it's possible that your partner might cheat on you. But the important thing to notice here is that you may be biased toward these threats, even when they are not accurate. Here are 12 common biases in thinking that might contribute to your jealousy. Take a look and see whether any are familiar to you. Mind reading. You assume that you know what your partner or others are thinking without having sufficient evidence of their thoughts. He thinks she's sexy, or she's after my husband. Fortune telling. You predict the future negatively. Things will get worse, or there is danger ahead. He will run off with someone else, or she will be unfaithful to me. Catastrophizing. You believe that what has happened or could happen is so awful and unbearable that you won't be able to stand it. It would devastate me if I were betrayed, or it is the end of everything between us because he finds another woman appealing. Labeling. You assign global negative traits to yourself and others. I'm boring, or he's a cheat. Discounting positives. You claim that the positive things about you or your relationship are trivial. Just because she says she loves me doesn't mean she won't cheat on me. Or, even though there are a lot of good things in our relationship, I still can't trust him. Negative filtering. You focus almost exclusively on the negatives and seldom notice the positives in your relationship. We haven't had sex in a couple of weeks, or we had an argument, so that means that things are really bad and he might leave me. Overgeneralizing. On the basis of a single incident,